Hi, my name is Aryeh Kaplan, and today we're going to be learning Shkalim, Chapter 8, Mishnah 8, the final Mishnah in Shkalim. So the Mishnah begins, Evre hatamid itanin mechati kevesh ulamata b'ma'arav. So what's going on here is that the tamid is one of the first thing that they do in the temple in the morning. So they would take the tamid offering, they would slaughter it, they would then put the blood onto the altar, and then comes our mission, that they would cut the limbs, they prepare the limbs, and before they would put the limbs on the altar, they would place them on the lower half of the ramp going up to the altar on the western side. And some of the commentaries explain that at this point, after they were to place the limbs, they would go to pray, light the menorah, and offer the incense. And then they would come back and put the limbs onto the altar. Vishal Musafin. And the musafin, when they had, on a day you had to have musaf, so where do they put those limbs? Like, where on the ramp do they put them while they're waiting to put them on the altar? Nitanin mechati kevesh ulamata b'mizrach. They would place them on the lower half of the ramp, but on the eastern side, in order not to confuse them with the tamid, because the tamid had to go on to the altar first. And what about if it was Rosh Chodesh? So it's additional. V'shar Rosh Chodesh nitanin mitachas karkov hamizbeach milamata. So Rosh Chodesh, the limbs of the Rosh Chodesh would go in a completely different space. It would go below the karkov of the altar. So karkov is a major debate. So we'll go with the commentary of Rav Adjei Bar Tanura, who said the karkov was really not even on the ramp at all. Really, it was on the soviv, which was around the side of the altar on the east. So he said that Rosh Chodesh offering, they would put the limbs on the soviv around the east. And the commentary explained Rosh Chodesh was the highest up, because Rosh Chodesh, very few people would know it's Rosh Chodesh, because the only way to know it's Rosh Chodesh was to look up to see if there was a moon and to know if the Beis Din declared a Rosh Chodesh. Therefore, they put the limbs of the Rosh Chodesh very high up so people could see, oh, and say today is Rosh Chodesh and learn about it. Now, the Mishnah moves on to another topic. Hashkalim v'habikurim eino nogin ela bifnei habayis. So the Mishnah tells us that shkalim, the main subject of our tractate, the half shekel that one has to give yearly, and bikurim, the first fruits that one has to bring to the temple, this only applies when the temple is standing. And the reason for this is that the shkalim were given in order to buy the sacrifices, and the bikurim are explicitly linked in the pasuk that it's dealing with. Bikurim says explicitly about taking your first fruits and bringing them to the house of Hashem, and without the house there, it's just not possible to do the bikurim. Aval, however, Meiser Dagon, this is the tithing of the grains, the wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt, that the first one had to give a portion to the Kohen, another tenth to the Levi, and then in some years another tenth became Meiser Sheni, and some years other tenth became Meiser Ani. So that applies whether it's the times of the temple, whether or not the times. Meiser Behema, and the rule that every 10 animals that are born to you become holy, that applies even when there is no Beis HaMikdash. Vabechoros, and the firstborns, that all the firstborns are holy, that also applies. No, again, the Mishnah says, Ben Bifnei Abayis, Ben Shalom Bifnei Abayis. Those apply whether the temple is standing, whether the temple is not standing. So now the Mishnah wants to know, let's say somebody says, I want to give Shalom anyways, I want to bring Bikurim anyways, even though there is no Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah says, Hamakdash Shalom Ubikurim Hari Ze Kodesh. So the Mishnah says that, yes, in theory, if one says this is my shekel, or takes off his first fruits and says, this is my bikurim, indeed they would become holy. We cannot do anything with them, so therefore one has to throw that money into the sea, and one has to let the fruit rot. But, technically speaking, one can't do it. One's not obligated to do that, and one shouldn't do it, because it really ends up wasting the stuff. But technically, if one does it, it would work. The Mishnah concludes, Rabbi Shimon says, Ha'omer bikurim kodesh inan kodesh. Rabbi Shimon disagrees on the point of bikurim. He feels that now, when there's no temple, it is impossible for one to establish bikurim. And the reason he believes that is because the pasuk so closely links bikurim and Hashem's home, bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash. The pasuk in Shemos 23:19 and 34:26 says, Reishis Bikurim Adma Tzcha
Tavi Beis Hashem Arecha. The choices of your first fruit of your Bikurim, of your land, you shall bring to the house of Hashem. So he holds that it's directly, it's not, there's no point, there's no idea of the first fruits without being able to bring it to the house of Hashem. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon says that it's impossible. Even if somebody says it's your Bikurim, it does not work. That concludes the 8th Mishnah and the 8th chapter and Masechet Shkalim. I hope everyone has a great day.
We have just finished Mishnayos Yomi for Masechet Shkalim and are about to begin a new Masechta, Masechet Yoma. Masechet Yoma, of course, deals with the halachos of Yom Kippur. Yoma means the day, the great day of Yom Kippur. Most of the Masechta deals with the korbonos, which are brought on Yom Kippur, which have to be done by the Kohen Gadol. Because all of the avodos, the procedures in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur, had to be done by the Kohen Gadol. As is explained at length and in great detail, even in Torah Shebiksav, in Parshas Achremos. As we will see, the last perek deals with the Yom Kippur, which we are familiar with the laws of fasting, and tshuva, and kapora, etc. This first perek, of which we are about to learn Mishnah Aleph, describes the preparations that the Kohen Gadol did in order to be ready for the avoda which he had to do on Yom Kippur. Shekein kol avodas hayom eino kishero elobo. All the procedures, as we will see, almost all the procedures which had to be done on Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash had to be done by the Kohen Gadol. And so, he had to prepare himself, and the preparations were done during the period of 7 days before Yom Kippur. The Mishnah begins and says, Shivas Yomim Kodim Yom HaKippurim Mafrishin Kohen Gadol Mi Beiso Lolishkas Palhedrin. 7 days before Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol was separated Mi Beiso, meaning not only did he leave his home, but he left his wife, and spent those 7 days in a lishka, in a chamber, in the Beis HaMikdosh, known as Lishkas Palhedrin. The requirement for the Kohen Gadol to be in this kind of seclusion, certainly secluded from his family, 7 days before Yom Kippur, is the subject of a discussion in the Gemara, and the conclusion is that we learn this from the Shivas Yimei HaMiluim. In Vayikra Perek Ches Posuk Lamed Gimel, we learn that the Kohen Gadol, during the days when the Mishkan was inaugurated in the Midbar, the Kohanim had to remain in the Ohel Moed for 7 days and not leave it. And then the Pasuk concludes, Kasher Oso Bayom Hazeh, Sivo Hashem La'asos L'chaper Aleichem. That the same seclusion that was necessary for the 7 days of the Yemei HaMiluim, the days in which the Mishkan was inaugurated, so too does the Kohen Gadol, when he is involved in the procedure of Lechaper Aleichem, of bringing about a kapora, forgiveness for the Jewish people, has to separate himself and enter the Beis HaMikdash and not leave it 7 days before Yom Kippur. He spends his time in a chamber known as Lishkas Palhedrin. This chamber was in the Azorah, was in the temple courtyard and was on the map of the temple courtyard, but it had a door leading outward into the place which was not part of the temple courtyard. So the actual Lishka was Bakodesh, was in the sanctified territory of the Beis HaMikdash. But the door was Pasuach L'chol, was open to where it was, did not have the same degree of sanctity. And this is what allowed the Kohen to live, to sit, to dwell, to sleep in this Lishka. Otherwise, we have the rule of Ein Yeshiva Ba'azoro Elo L'malchei Beis Tovid Bulvat. People other than the king from the house of David, are not allowed to sit, let alone lie and sleep, in the Azoro, in the temple courtyard. However, this particular Lishka, since it opened out onto the outside of the Azoro, did not have that level of Kedusha, and it was able to live there in a normal fashion. This Lishka was called Palhedrin, or in the Gemara, Parhedrin. And this is a Greek word which means pikidim, clerks, pawns, low-level officials. Gemara explains that originally this Lishka was called Lishkas Balvati. Balvati in Greek means ministers, princes, prestigious people. However, in the time of the second bias, the quality of the Kohen Gadol deteriorated, and indeed the position of Kohuna Gadola, the position of being the Kohen Gadol, was up for grabs for money, and every so often, very frequently, every year, there would be fights, disputes, etc., and the Kohen Gadol would die with a rosha. According to Rashi, lo hayu motziim shnosom, he wouldn't last a year. So very frequently, the Kohen Gadol would be changed, like the Pekidei HaMelech, like the low officials of the king, are also changed from one time to another. The king arbitrarily can change his lowly officials anytime he wants to. These low officials were called Parhedrin or Palhedrin, and that was the name by which this Lishka, this chamber, was known during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Interestingly, the Mishnah continues and says, Umaskinen lo kohen acher tachtov. They prepared, although he did not have to go into seclusion, but they prepared a second Kohen Gadol who did not have to go undergo Hafrosha, but had to be at the ready in case some psul, shemo ye'erabo psul, lest the Kohen Gadol become ill or become tome or in some other way become defective and not be able to be act as a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. So they had a backup Kohen Gadol who was ready to take over in case anything would happen to the first one. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Isha Acheres Maskinen Lo. Rabbi Yehuda says not only did they prepare a backup Kohen Gadol for the first Kohen Gadol, but they prepared a backup wife for him. Because the Kohen Gadol had to be married, he had to have a wife. As the Pasuk says, V'chiper ba'ado v'ad beiso, that he brought certain korbanos, which we will study about, which brought about a kapora for himself and for his bias. Bias means for his wife. So Rabbi Yehuda was concerned, Shema tomos ishto, maybe his current wife would die. So there would have to be a backup wife, because after all, Shenema v'chiper ba'ado v'yad beiso, he had to be married. Beiso zo ishto. Beiso, one's house, means one's wife. This is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, The Gemara explains a complicated way how we set up a situation so that if one wife died, the other wife would be able to take over. But the halacha is not that way. Amr lo, the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda, we don't have to prepare a replacement wife for him. Kain ein ladover sof. If you're going to worry about maybe she'll die, there's no end to the matter. Maybe the second wife that's prepared for him will die. How many wives can you line up in the batter's circle for him? Can't be done. Not necessary. The Rabbonon, the Chachamim, are not concerned with Shema Yomus. Maybe someone will die. He's married. Matter of days we're talking about. The odds are she's going to live. She's not ill. And therefore we don't have to have a backup wife. However, the Chachamim are chosheish, are concerned that the Kohen Gadol might become Tomei. He might become Tomei, so therefore they prepared for him a backup Kohen Gadol. This is the first Mishnah, and the end really of lesson number one in our study of Maseches Yoma. Tomorrow, we will continue with Mishnah Beis and Mishnah Gimel.